Rootstock Radio is brought to you by Organic Valley.
And you are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM, and this is the WEFT Courier, usually the end of the WEFT Courier at 6 p.m., but today we have an episode of In the Know with your host, Sherry Williamson, coming up next. So stay tuned.
Welcome to Rootstock Radio. Join us as host.
You are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. You can listen to Rootstock Radio every Monday at 5:30 on WEFT Community Radio. Coming up is In the Know, a WEFT-produced public affairs show that highlights locally available resources. Stay with us after that for Champaign-Urbana Radio Theater at 7 p.m., Monday Night R&R at 8, and live local music on WEFT Sessions at 10 o'clock, and recorded local music on Champaign Local 901 at 11 o'clock. We have a little bit of underwriting, and then we will be getting into our show.
A destination for coffee and community for over 20 years, Cafe Kopi is proud to support WEFT Community Radio. Located in downtown Champaign, Cafe Kopi offers a variety of gourmet coffee, teas, pastries, and sandwiches from 7 a.m. to midnight, 7 days a week. They have a Facebook page, Twitter, or their website is cafe-kopi.com.
Good evening, CU community. You're listening to WEFT 90.1. Welcome to In the Know, a public affairs show where social issues, trending topics, relevant research, and important perspectives are discussed so you, the listener, can be in the know. The opinions expressed on the show are those of the host and guests and not of WEFT. We normally stream live on Facebook, but we're taking a break this week. However, you can submit questions or any other comments at Twitter at Nature79. This evening, we'll be having a candid discussion on parent engagement. So what that means, what it looks like in today's schools, and then how we can improve parent engagement. We have three guests in the studio this evening. I'm going to go around and have them introduce themselves. We'll start over here with Summer.
Hi, I'm Summer Curry. I'm a parent of a Unit 4th student. She's in middle school right about now.
Yeah, and I'm Sheldon Turner. I work with Operation Hope, Champaign Unit 4th Schools, and I'm also a parent.
And my name is Mia Leviso. I am currently a school social worker at Centennial High School, and I also have two children who are students of the Unit 4 School District, as well as my dissertation topic was parent involvement, Black parent involvement, and it's called The Untold Story. So.
Wonderful. Thank you guys for being in the studio this evening. So like always, we're just going to kind of jump right into it. Parent engagement, I think, is something that we've started to debate a little bit more in the last, you know, decade. Now that people have busier schedules, now that there's technology, you know, people are looking for different ways to engage. So it's not just being at the PTA. It's not always volunteering in your child's classrooms. Now we're looking for new ways to get the same parents to engage, but really how we get a lot of the parents of, for instance, high-risk students or, you know, a variety of other types of parents who haven't historically engaged, how do we get them involved? Because now we know that schools, just like social service agencies, are doing more with less, and so we really need the support of our parents, but we need to get them engaged. So how do you interpret when you hear the term parent engagement? What does that mean to you? Summer.
Well, I think for me, it means actually being there at the school, working with my kid, working with teachers, seeing where I can be of help in any place in the school district or in the school. I know in the past, what it's been for me was being a part of the PTA, doing extra work around the school, things like that.
Mm-hmm. So with the group of students that you have, Sheldon, I know parent engagement is obviously very key. How do you see parents engaging, and what would you like to see them doing?
Well, we started by sending letters home to letting the parents know what's going on with their students or their child. We'd like to see them come out more to kind of come to like maybe some of the events that the schools have. Like I think one of the events is Nap It Day. That's one. But just being involved with maybe parent-teacher conferences, you know. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes when the kid, their child asks them to come have lunch with them, just being, you know, being visible in the schools.
Yeah.
Just kind of getting to know the teachers and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So we promote, you know, students and parents coming to the schools and just kind of knowing what's going on.
Okay. And what about you, Mia? How do you, again, see parents engaging right now, and how would you like to see them engaging?
I think I'm a little bit different from the normal way of looking at parent involvement. I think parent involvement, it can be a little too limiting, just the term itself. With not every parent has access or time to engage in PTA, engage in being in the classroom and things like that. While that is very beneficial, especially with elementary age children, I think that, so with me being in high school and having a high schooler as well, I think that parent involvement looks different. Mm-hmm. It looks something more where you're supporting your child. There's something that is definitely researched and discussed quite often is the home curriculum. So what's happening at home? What are the things that parents are doing that really benefit the child once they leave the home and go into the school setting? So for me, I see parents. So we had open house last week, and we did see a very low turnout. What happens typically is that even when you do it at night, there are so many other factors. You have other children who are in the home, so parents may not have childcare and things like that. So we have to be very careful of limiting parents to just one set of standard that says this is how involvement looks. So I think that we need to be inclusive of time poverty for parents, parents who may be working low-wage jobs, who may not be able to leave their place of employment to engage in that same way.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I think also maybe even us taking the involvement to the parents. So where are we meeting them? Can we meet them where they are in their space and have these kind of discussions, helping them to learn how to advocate for themselves, how to advocate for their children in a way that is meaningful and, again, engaging? And I think that when we do that and we see parents as partners in education instead of clients, I think that we'll have a really more beneficial relationship with parents.
Mm-hmm. I mean, parents are doing essentially the same thing in some households. They're doing more with less, and sometimes
Absolutely.
That means working two jobs. And so when you have a parent who works two jobs and they have sporadic schedules and they're kind of at the mercy of their employer, you know, how do you expect them to take off time when that can be detrimental to their ability to even have upward mobility within their company? If, well, you're taking off time to go to your kid's school, why do you need to be at your kid's school all the time? You know, I think each system has a different appreciation of the education system. And so how we are asking our parents to engage, it's like you said, we have to redefine this. It cannot be the standard set of join the PTA. Now I say that because actually I was elected as the president of the Champaign Unit 4 PTA Council. That said, I also define the way I do parent engagement differently. And that's part of what I want to do with the council and spread it through the schools is the PTA is great. It has its purpose. But even if you look at the mission and the bylaws, the way the PTA is set up is supposed to be for exactly this. How do we support our students? How do we give them and their families the resources that they need? We aren't just the PTA that does the bake sale and the fundraising and the carnivals and things like that. Definitely. We have to go broader than that. So I'd love to see us have a return to what the PTA was actually meant to do. And that is a partnership. Mm-hmm. It's a partnership with teachers because I know it's not a fun opinion to share, but, you know, teachers aren't always supported in our schools. Oh, we see a lot of them who would love to make change, and they aren't supported by their administration or their, you know, their district administration. We do have a new superintendent now. Dr. Zola has taken over this year, so it's unfair to say what we can expect yet. But I did attend a PTA council meeting last week, and they kind of drafted out what their, you know, grand scheme is for, you know, the next however long, you know, what that means, leadership, you know, being able to deal with socio-emotional issues within the school. So I think there is a lot of, you know, we're at the beginning of a lot of different paths. So we got to see where those kind of lead us to. But, you know, like you've all mentioned obstacles. Mm-hmm. What do you see as being some of the bigger obstacles that we have with parents engaging?
I would say, I think it's time. A lot of parents don't have the time, which is what Mia was talking about. Don't have the time to be able to volunteer and to engage. And once they're off of work, it's homework, dinner, bed. You know, that's it. And for me, I know that it took me a while before I became more engaged because mm-hmm. it was more of the time that I didn't have to be able to do much. But going back to what Mia said, you know, it's more than just volunteering with the PTA, and it is a lot more of the parent engagement at home. And so my engagement for my child's first few years of elementary school was doing more with her at home. Mm-hmm. And that's what took up the majority of my time. And as she got older and a little bit more independent, I was able to do more at school. So, yeah.
Yeah, and those are good things, too. Intimidation. I think there are parents that feel that they are intimidated when they walk into the school because sometimes they get a lot of bad news all the time. And mm-hmm. so when they're coming into the school and already saying, hey, I already know my son have done, daughter have done this or that, they feel intimidated. And when you're intimidated, that's kind of the worst feelings to have when you're trying to, you know, you want to go check on your child. Mm-hmm. So what we do is we send good news, you know, inviting the parents to some of our orientations and some of our family outings, bowling nights and stuff like that. And we also send them messages when the kids have been doing well, mm-hmm. kind of open up their relationship so they don't feel so intimidated. So.
Yeah, so you're kind of, you know, like you said, starting off on a negative note, you're operating from a place of deficiency versus a place of, you know, what are your assets, what are your strengths? And so I think it's kind of like the idea of guilty by association. Well, your child's in trouble, so what does that mean about you as a parent? Right. What are you not doing with your child? And so I think you automatically start to disempower the person who's in front of you because now you're getting that under a magnifying glass. What aren't, like Summer was saying, what aren't you doing in your house? What should you be doing? I think that it can be, you know, hard to empower people, especially those who are historically, you know, oppressed by other systems. Now you're asking them to come into a new system where either maybe, you know, it's cyclical in the family, education has not been a priority, and you've seen it through the generations. And then, like you said, now you get this big stamp that says, now here's where you've really gone wrong. And so now you're pushing them down even farther. So what are they going to offer? What are they even going to offer to the conversation that you're obligating them to right now? So I think that's a good point, you know, what both of you have shared. Even if you know what you need to improve on, some parents don't have the time even in their own homes to address it the way they would want to. Some, because of if it's like cyclical in a family, may not know what those steps are. You know, my... a friend and I watched this comedian, and he was joking about, you know, his friends were talking about parent-teacher conferences, and he joked, well, what are those? He's like, my father didn't even know where the school was. But, you know, he jokes about that, but there is some truth to that that's been coming through the decades for a long time. Some parents are hands-off, and now you have technology stepping in, so some parents are even more hands-off. Well, they can just Google that. They don't need me. Yes. So now we have this, you know, being hit by all sorts of different sides when it comes to parents being involved the way they should be involved. You know, there was a teacher I spoke to who said that out of all the parent-teacher conferences that were scheduled, only 4 showed up out of a class of 26. Why is that happening? You know, what kind of obstacles do you see, Mia?
Well, I think something also that we need to take into consideration, levels of education for that parent. Again, kind of piggybacking on what Sheldon said, intimidation in many forms, not only as the bad kid or labeled as the bad parent, but also there's oftentimes where there's conversations that are happening where parents have felt, and this was uncovered in my research, parents felt that the teachers were kind of talking over their heads almost intentionally, where there was this knowing that they were not necessarily grasping the conversation at the level that it was being delivered.
And then who does that help, really?
Exactly, exactly. And then, so that's what happens as well. So then there's an aversion to even walking through the door and saying, oh, I know that they're already going to treat me a certain way. And certainly that's something that we have to look at. We have to take that into consideration and say, how are we treating people? How are we meeting them where they are so mm-hmm. that they're getting the best opportunity to advocate for their child. Mm-hmm. And so there's also some room for growth for parents as well, because then you have some parents, and I've heard teachers say, well, they come in and they're very hostile and, you know, they're aggressive. But sometimes we have to be very careful of how we label those parents, because they're coming in maybe with their own set of insecurities. Mm-hmm. And they're saying, well, I'm going to be defensive because I know that they're viewing me a certain way. And sometimes it's just how they may be viewing themselves.
Right.
Maybe they feel that they're not doing what they could or something to access that network or how to. And that's social capital plays such a huge role in schools and things like that. But what we have to also take into consideration really weigh is that there's a certain level of cultural capital in every home, irrespective of finances or socioeconomics, that children bring to school with them. Mm-hmm. And we have to learn how to tap into that as well. Mm-hmm. And I think that once we learn that, and it's a lot to ask for from teachers, because they're overburdened anyway with the Common Core. And, you know, they are restricted in the sense in how they're able to teach, because they have to teach now under this rigid guideline, so they don't have some of the flexibility to do that. Then you want to say, okay, now I have to add in this social-emotional learning. Then I have to add in how do I engage the parents and things like that. So teachers certainly, you know, people say, well, they have a lot of support. Not necessarily. You know, we can support them, and we should be a community, a collectivist community supporting one another. And I think we could really, really move the bar higher mm-hmm. For our expectation for children, parents, and teachers.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of misconceptions that happen from a lot of different levels, you know, from parent to teacher yes. to school administrator, absolutely. School administrator, all the way up to the district level. You know, what is your agenda? That seems to be the running theme. Yes. What is your agenda? Like you said, are you coming in here hot, hostile? Mm-hmm. What's your agenda then? Mm-hmm. What are you going to do with me? Well, then the parent's coming in. Well, what is the teacher's agenda?
Yes.
You have a lot of, you know, overturn in the school district where we have new administrators yes. and a lot of buildings. Again, what are the new administrators' agendas coming in? So, you know, there's just so much when it comes to agendas within a school system.
Totally.
I think there is a misconception that if a parent's not engaging or they're engaging in a way that isn't constructive or productive, that, well, you don't care about how your student does. And I think that does come from a cultural basis of, you know, this is just the way they've learned to handle conflict,
mm-hmm.
Being emotionally charged. But really, you know, no different than kind of the show we had last week that talked about mental health. When you're talking about your child and their success yes. in any area of life, when you see that being jeopardized, why would you not be emotional?
Absolutely.
Why would a parent not be emotional when they know that their child is suffering, especially when you're talking about parents who don't have a high educational level? They probably really want that child mm-hmm. to go farther than they did. And now
absolutely.
They're seeing a backslide. And so that can be really frightening for a parent, especially those who are oppressed. How do I advocate?
Mm-hmm.
How do I make sure this child does not end up in the same place that I did? I find it hard to believe that those parents are not having at least part of that internal conversation
definitely.
With themselves, mm-hmm. even if they do take the path of least resistance, because they just don't know any other way of doing it. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the misperceptions that we have. You know, when my daughter started kindergarten and I was thinking, you know, I want to be involved in her school. That was primarily because I want to know what y'all are doing and if I'm paying what I'm supposed to be paying for your salaries. But when I asked what that engagement was, the first thing I heard was, well, join the PTA. Okay. All right. Well, I did that the first year. I was willing to jump on that bandwagon. But because of the school that she went to and because it had such a high free and reduced lunch population, I quickly realized this is not the engagement I personally want to do. That's actually what led to me going into social work from psychology, was because when I got involved, the work I did was social worky, as they called it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, why do you feel the PTA is no longer the right way for parents to engage or I can't say right way, no longer the only way for them to engage? And why are we still hearing that it is the only way for parents to engage? What do you think, Summer? Because you've been a PTA parent, have you?
I have.
Okay.
I wouldn't say that. Well, you did correct it. You just say, the only way. I think it's one component of many that parents can do as far as the engagement. But it all depends upon the PTA and yes. which PTA it is. Where we are now, the PTA, I haven't seen much, but that doesn't mean I don't know what's happening behind the scenes. But when I was part of the PTA in elementary school, the PTA did quite a bit, even trying to make sure that when we were going through the whole building reconstruction period, the PTA was fighting for certain things to happen at the district level. The PTA now, as far as the middle school that we're at, like I said, I don't really know what's happening, what's going on. Could they reach out more? Yeah, possibly. Could they do more? Yeah, sure. But then I get to go to a meeting tomorrow to find out what's happening, what's going on. So I don't think that the PTA, I guess I really don't have much of an opinion about what's actually happening, what's actually going on. I need to do more to learn more and be involved more with them.
One question, though, with that, and I think this for me is, this is one of the questions I have. Who's supposed to reach out to who when it comes to parent engagement? So when it comes to the PTA, I would task them with being the ones to get flyers out, get things posted around the school saying, here's what the PTA does. Because otherwise, like you said, you don't know what they're doing. They may be saving the world and you have no idea what they're doing. You really want them to be able to have an idea because, like you said, it varies from school to school. Yes. Middle school PTA can look different than elementary. And right. So those expectations starting from the beginning of the school year saying, as a middle school PTA, this is what we want to accomplish. That kind of gives parents the choice of how they want, if they want to engage, and even under the different, ideas that they have as a PTA, can a parent offer a suggestion for, well, here's one of your mission statements for the year, how can I help support you? So,
and I don't know if maybe that's something that they're waiting for their, the first meeting. Mm-hmm. Once the first meeting comes, they give out the information. But I think if they are waiting for that first meeting, they're missing out on so many opportunities because what if the parent doesn't come? How do they then reach out to other parents who may have missed that first initial meeting for the semester?
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I got two views on PTA. One, I would love to see Operation Hope with our own PTA. We've had it before in the past, and we kind of just so we're working on that. The other one is I'm always in my kids' schools because I just like being around them when they're in their school. I mean, I've been to the field days and things like that when they would call me to come and kind of volunteer. I don't see myself having to really join a PTA because I'm already I'm just there. I just go. If I needed to be in a PTA, I guess it wouldn't hurt. But I guess I'm just so involved in the schools anyway. I don't really have an opinion on it.
Mm-hmm.
But I would like to have our own. We would have our own with Operation Hope. So I guess we can kind of look at how our PTA would look and kind of design it in our own way. So.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I always sign up for the PTA and give my money, and I never show up. Mm-hmm. And so does that make me uninvolved? No. I have students who are excelling academically. But I think something that happens in the PTA, there's a turnoff for some parents. And I had a mother from the PTA who was just amazing. My youngest son attends Bottenfield, and she came to me, and she was very forthcoming, and she said, how do we get more African-American parents involved in the PTA? And I said, you have to make them feel welcomed. They have to have a voice if they show up, because they do offer childcare, but you have to understand that everybody is not always comfortable with someone watching their children, even if it's in another room. It just depends. But when they go and when they show up, if they feel like they are not a part of that conversation, if they, oftentimes there's research to support this. I'm not just pulling this out of my hat. The PTA can be a very, very cold place and unwelcoming for some parents because it is typically run by upper middle class, stay-at-home parents, mothers, mostly. And so what happens when that education divide, that economic divide happens, it, just in that room that is not necessarily, it's more covert. It isn't overtly stated, but sometimes people enter into that space with a level of discomfort, and they have felt quite often that, well, what am I here for? Because I'm being told what's happening with the PTA. I don't have a voice in it, irrespective of paying my $10 or $15, whatever it is that it costs. And I was listening to you, Sherry. I love the direction that you're talking about taking with being the president of the council, because I think that you will be able to reach more people with that approach, being more inclusive and saying, hey, we can do more with more. So I think that's really exciting. I really do. And I always join because I know that it's important to support, even if it's financially, because I do know that the PTA is always built with good intention, the direction they want to help. But I've had many parents that were president or vice president of PTA and said, well, nothing happens. Bullying, oh, that doesn't happen to my child because I'm the president. Well, okay, you're the president of that PTA, but you should be the president and the PTA mom for all children in that building, not just your own. So let's hold people accountable, because PTA is, again, for all of the children, like you said. It isn't just for my child. And so there were times, many times, when I had the flexibility. Now I'm like working a full day, when I had the flexibility to go into a classroom and help manage some things in that classroom. But that just isn't my way of engagement. And so the PTA is not my way of engagement. But I don't have any disparaging words for the PTA at all. I think what they're doing, it takes a lot of work and commitment. And I applaud anybody who is actively engaged in it. I just think that we need to be more inclusive in how we get people out, and just the agenda and things like that. What are we really trying to do when we say join the PTA? Are we really trying to get buy-in from the parents, or are we just trying to get bodies in the building and then again dictate, well, this is what we're doing. Oh, this is what we did last year. I went to one PTA meeting, and when they kept saying, well, this is what we always do. When you have that, you're not flexible to work within, work outside that box, you're going to run people away. People are not going to be interested. So you're going to just have your board members there. Executive board members. I mean,
probably not the best source to quote, but I saw the movie Bad Moms.
I know.
The main character gets up when she's doing, you know, her speech, and she basically said, "I don't know all the answers. You know, there are days I'm good. I'm a good parent. I'm a bad parent. Everybody has good parent, bad parent days. Sometimes you probably sit there and wonder, how did they give me kids? How'd you let this one come home from the hospital with me?" But that's just the reality of life, especially the busy we are, especially the more children you have in the house. You know, I've mentioned this to some parents that, you know, one of the directions I want to go is peer mentor groups, where you have parents who have had a journey themselves, whether it's IEPs, kind of going back to what you were saying, where they talk over you a little bit in IEPs. Yes. So you have a parent at the beginning of that journey, so many motions going on, but still I want to help my child. They're giving me direction. I need to hold on to something and figure this out. Now you have another parent who this is their second or third year of having an IEP. They can step in and say, let me support you. You know, if you need to vent, I know what's how you feel to some degree. But, you know, here's my tips and strategies for how I navigated, you know, the IEP process. You know, can I sit in with you and be an advocate for you right in the middle of the meeting and say, can you please expand on this concept? Because this is something that a lot of us IEP parents get lost with, you know, and I think to a big degree that also can empower a lot of parents who may not feel like they have something to offer, but you do. Yes, you have a lot of value to offer because you've dealt with systems. Yes. You know, even parents who have children who've been part of the juvenile court system, you still have a lot of value to offer in the way of saying, okay, I know what you're going through. I know your child's been a part of this system. Here's how I'm trying to turn it around. Here's, you know, strategies that, you know, try to help them see that there is other options than just the one that somebody has kind of laid out for them and said, well, you know, here's the, you know, prison or school to prison pipeline. You know, you're navigating it really well. You know, we need to be able to empower our parents. And sometimes that first starts with peer support. I think there also is a better chance of parents maybe disclosing to each other, mm-hmm. even though I would eventually like to see a bridge to disclosing to the school. Sometimes you have to start with somebody you can trust mm-hmm. and then hopefully build that yes. relationship to the school, have that person who's kind of the conduit. And I think you start creating leaders then. You create leaders in your school by nothing else than saying, we want your testament. We want you to share your story and give us that power back as parents on how we can contribute, not overrun the school, not turn it over, not have anarchy, but how we can do what we're supposed to be doing as parents and really advocating for our students. But that takes instruction. Nobody just is born an advocate. And so, you know, I would love to see this actually be separate from the council. Primarily because I think when you hear council, you think of, or PTA, you think of a certain agenda. Mm-hmm. I don't want there to be any concern that, you know, this is an agenda that's already set out for you. No, this is separate in the fact that we're getting parents together to talk about topics and how do you think this should go? We want you to be empowered in your schools. So, you know, hoping to see that, you know, start to work itself into some of the schools where we see them, you know, doing a little bit, you know, more with yes. what you have. They have to some of the schools where we see them, you know, doing a little bit, you know, more with yes. what you have, the assets you have, which are your parents, their assets, no matter how you want to look at them.
Absolutely.
They are very much so your assets. They know something. That's for sure, because they talk a lot. They know something. Pull on that. Use that.
And then the other thing is, how can we help the parents, you know, if it's things that they need, resources, mm-hmm. If they need to try to go back to school so that they can learn this mm-hmm. terminology, how can we help them, you know, get something so they can get back in school, or, you know, just trying to help the parents as well.
Well, and just even being educated on not even having to go for a master's or, you know, a PhD, right. just any level of education yes. where you have knowledge is power. Mm-hmm. I think, again, that makes that parent realize, hey, I can do a lot. I'm not just a parent, you know, who's gone through systems. I can give back. Right. You were going to say something, Summer?
Yeah, I was just thinking that that's a good idea, just with the parent-to-parent mentoring, just because, you know, you think about parents coming new, like, we transitioned to middle school, my child before yours, you know, but I just thought about how it was for us when we first got to middle school and how we just really didn't know a lot. Luckily, I had a friend whose kid had already started middle school the year prior, so she was able to give me a sort of a rundown of what's going on, what's happened. And, you know, I think that will be very beneficial just in that sort of aspect, having parents who have already been through, like you said, the IED or the juvenile system. But having parents who have already had that experience in other areas who can say, hey, this is what this, you know, this is X, Y, and Z that's happening, and you may want to do this, this, and this, or you may want to check your emails because the school sends all these this information out. Or if you don't understand how your child's grades are looking, and the teacher isn't responding to you, or you can't get in contact with them the way you want to, I can show you, I can help you, or I can get you in touch with someone else who can help you to understand what's actually going on with your kid in the school system.
And that goes along with what Mia was saying. You're welcoming them into that mm-hmm. school. You're embracing them. You know, they say it takes a village. We've yes. moved away from the wraparound concept, but we have to wrap around more than just the student. Mm-hmm. We have to wrap around the family
right.
because, exactly. you know, you can do whatever you want all day, mm-hmm. 6 hours a day, 7 hours a day with the student, but they will come home to a certain way of thinking and believing in certain resources and assets. You have to be able to wrap around the entire family to start pushing them in the right direction. And again, that starts to empower the parent. And who, you know, you don't want it to be where it seems, you know, disingenuous. Well, the school's just doing that because they're doing that. Mm-hmm. You have parents who are helping each other. Now there's more sincerity there right, because right. it's a parent who gets it. Mm-hmm. They understand what I need, so they're going to try to reach out and help. And I think, you know, maybe you can start to build bridges across racial lines because,
absolutely.
Well, a white parent to a white parent, a Latina parent to a Latina parent, you know, a black parent to a black parent. Yeah, again, we can start out that way, but hopefully we can start to see that, well, there are other parents of other demographics who've had the exact same issue that I've had. So now how can we have a coalition around a topic, mm-hmm. bringing all sorts of different parents from different backgrounds into the conversation? You know, we've kind of talked about demographics being a part of how parents engage. And I know the one topic that will get some administrators to turn off the conversation with me is, you know, race. how race really is a reality of every system, not just mm-hmm. education. So mm-hmm. it's not saying that any administrator or school administrator, it's their deficiency. This is just a part of all of our systems, period. But, you know, there was, like, for instance, I think at one point in Unit 4, let me know if I'm wrong, there was a black PTA. Yeah, somebody said that there was a black PTA.
They were trying to start something like that.
Right. Yeah. And parents had said, well, why do we need a black PTA? We have a PTA. Well, there's a Latino PTA. Mm-hmm. They've been strong, like Million Man March strong for a long time. Mm-hmm. Again, why are we having issues with parents working together? If at the end of the day, they're supporting their student, if that's how they start out, and that, then it's up to really everybody else to figure out a way to build coalition mm-hmm. so that all the PTAs can come together with the same, you know, same common ideas that we can work collectively with. But why not have different, you know, spinoffs of the same idea if it means better support mm-hmm. that's received better by parents because now it's from a familiar phase.
Right.
So why do you think there's pushback when it comes to these ideas of spinoffs with the PTA?
I think because it's a difference. It's not a part of what people consider to be the norm, you know. Mm-hmm. And anytime, even in society, when you have something that people want to be different or do something different with, you're going to have pushback. We see it now today, and I think that with different types of PTAs that were trying to be started, like the African-American one, a lot of people probably pushed back because they probably felt that, you know, well, why don't they just come to the original one? But as was mentioned earlier, but what's the agenda? And if mm-hmm. if African-American parents don't feel like their needs are being met via mm-hmm. that PTA, they're not going to go. They're not going to show up. And that could be very well the reason why the African American or black PTA was wanted to be started here in the mm-hmm. city.
Mm-hmm. I think fear.
Mm.
I really
fear
do.
Of what?
I think anytime you have cultural these cultural groups, so to speak, that engage only themselves in a sense. And it's interesting that you said the Latino PTA had been, because I'd never even heard of that, which is, I mean, I think it's awesome
right.
if that is what helps that community. Because they, you know, we have these, again, I always talk about collectivism versus individualism. And many and different cultures operate in a collectivist type of mindset. But I think what happens is that we're so individualistic and it's like, well, what are they taking from our PTA? And so there is also a fear. Well, then many times they'll say, oh, they're going to play the race card if they're not getting their needs met and things like that, which, you know, playing the race card is something that is very troubling to me when people say that, because you're acting as if race is a game. Hmm. When you say something like that. So, but I do, I think there's always fear, like, what are they brewing together? And you know, there's many jokes that people say when, in certain spaces, when there are too many black females together. Oh, what is this? I mean, why are they all together? What's happening? And sometimes it's just commonality and just laughing or something like that. But mm-hmm. it doesn't mean that because we want something for our children, that we're trying to take away something from yours.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that once it's understood that the common goal, like you said, this commonality, is that we all want our children to succeed. And it is very troubling when I hear, oh, well, you know, they don't care about education. They're not showing up. They're not doing this. There is not a parent, I believe, who has their faculties, who are in their right mind, you know, barring mental health issues or anything like that, if you ask them, do you want your child to be successful? Do you want them to have a long life that is successful and prosperous? They're going to say no. I mean, that's not logical, and that's not happening. But what happens when you get in these spaces, people fear, well, if they're getting that, where are the resources? And it's something that I learned from one of my advisors. He said to me, and I thought it was so interesting, he said, everybody's fighting for this one slice of pie. Mm-hmm. Instead of looking at the whole pie,
mm-hmm.
there's an entire pie that's available to everybody, but we're all fighting for this this slice as if there's not enough. Right. And I think that's what happens. So, oh, are the resources going to go over there? And are they consuming our resources? And things like that. So that's when I say fear. I think it's fear of the unknown, fear of what may happen, fear of now maybe the shift of, oh, okay, well, if we have these the Latino, and then you have Black, and then you may have Asian American. And if you start having this, then it's like, are we being more divisive? I don't know. Are we separating too much and going too far away from what the collective goal should be? But I think that, that's where fear sometimes comes in, and this idea that, well, we don't want them to take what is ours, or, you know, and although it's everybody's, because yeah. we have to realize that parents and taxpayers really are the ones who run the school. We're stakeholders in this. If you pay taxes, and even if you don't, if just because you live in an apartment doesn't mean that your child has less, you know, access or should have less access to resources.
You're still paying taxes.
Exactly. Exactly, because you're helping that building.
Yeah. Well, and I think we saw it with School of Choice.
Yes,
we see this
big deal.
This problem where, well, this school's not getting what they're supposed to be getting. Okay, well, let's just move the kids around.
Right.
Why are we not looking at, well, what is it the parents perceive the school doesn't have? And how can we readjust from a district level to allocate appropriately so all the schools have exactly what they need? Going back to the PTA, we have a PTA. This is just rumor. I've heard this number a few times. I don't know how true it is. Mm-hmm. We have one PTA who raised $100,000. And then the suggestion was made, now let's have a district pot where everybody feeds into the same pot. Pushback was, no,
right.
That is our money. We are not giving it to a poor school, was the comment that I heard. And so, again, we are looking at, why did we not just make sure that we are across the board, everybody has the same thing? Why are we turning certain schools into magnet schools? Why are we pushing the gifted program into certain schools? Why are we not doing what we were supposed to be doing? Because if I look back and remember gifted when I was in elementary school, now granted, that was a while back, but every school had gifted.
Yes.
Yeah.
And our principal was hardcore about everybody in that. Every student in that school had the right to be gifted.
Absolutely.
That woman pushed so hard for everybody, no matter who they were, to be a part of the conversation, is how she put it. Mm-hmm. Which, when I was that age, I'm like, what is she talking about? But now I get it. You know, everybody is a part of that conversation. I read one of the listservs I have. You know, they talked about how, you know, Black children were all sitting together at the lunch table together. And some people were saying, well, now we're going back to segregation. But they were saying, but no, you have to allow them to feel safe first before they ever do any, you know, getting to know everybody else. But then that's a part of the school. How do you, again, build coalition? How do you build community with your students? So you see them sitting together like that. Well, that's up to you as a school to build that community. How do you do that? Because we all default back to what we know. That's just human nature. Why would you expect a little first grader not to do that? They don't think like this. They're not looking down the road at what this means. So again, you know, I think a lot of it comes back to who is tasked with this? School of Choice? Well, the district is tasked with this. But when you look at parent engagement, who is tasked with that? Is it the school administrators? Is it the district administrators? Is it the PTA? Is it the teachers? Is it other parents? You know, who do you think should be tasked with this idea of getting parents engaged?
I think everybody. I think it's something, a partnership between everyone involved, because that's the only way it's going to work. I think that teachers need to feel valued. And so many teachers are very disgruntled in their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and not necessarily people want to say it's because of the students. And if you just sit down and listen and talk to them, it's not always because of the students. I mean, they kind of have accepted that maybe this is just where we're going with education, and so I'm going to do the best, like you said, with little, more with little. I've said that correctly, but I think it is everybody's responsibility to make sure that not necessarily that the playing field is leveled, but more or less equity is happening. And that's when that goes back to that, where we're not going to give our money to them mentality, because then we still are going away from this wanting to see everybody grow and upward mobility and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's everybody has to be invested in the same goal, which is seeing these kids have a bright future and see something. And even with the gifted and things like that, it still does something. It's, you know, this tracking of kids is so detrimental. And watching kids tracked into the college track versus even it's not necessarily spoken, but the vocational track and things like that may be necessary. But when kids understand that they are being tracked and they, you know, so there's a gifted program at different schools, but it's also schools that seem like they're the struggling schools. So some parents are feeling like, well, why would I put my child there if that school is struggling in every other area? So are the teachers even qualified to teach my children? There are so many different layers to that.
Well, and I think it goes with success. I think it goes with success. You know, I think, you know, when you're talking about that slice of pie, why is it everybody's going for that one? What, how does that piece of pie fit in your definition of success? And I guarantee you, if you ask students what their definition of success is, it's going to vary from parents. And that's, you know, kind of what we were talking about last week when we were saying you have to check in with your students to find out what their definition of mental health is. Why aren't we checking in with our students when it comes to the definition of success? You know, now we have this whole thing of STEM. STEM is where it is. We got to make sure every kid is with STEM. Well, what happened to arts? Why is that not success?
Right.
Why is it if you have a child who loves to write, why is that not success? You know, it's kind of disheartening because I feel in that way, like you're saying, it's no different than, you know, the perceived PTA agenda. These students feel like, well, we have to go with Common Core. We have to do exactly what they want. We have to do well on these standardized tests. That's not their definition of success, though.
No.
But I think it goes back to what we originally, you know, step in. But then the parents who don't know, then that's where the parent-to-parent mentoring helps out. But for the parents who do step in and say, hey, you know, that's not the route we're going to take. My, for example, my kid, for her in elementary school, they have, they were moving in the direction of doing computer coding, things like that. And she was like, I do not like this at all. She's a dancer and she's an artist and she's she writes music. So that's what she does. And I recognized that and I said, okay, you know, we'll just give it a try to see how it will work for you. If it doesn't work, you know, no hard feelings. We'll just keep on moving in the direction that you want to go in. But that's because I knew that as a parent, what this is what I had to do for her. Now, some other parents may not know that and they may just take whatever is given to them from the school, but then that's what the other parents who could be mentors and friends to the parents say, hey, no, you know, evaluate, look at what your kid is doing, try to see where they are in life, and then maybe you can guide them to where they want to go. And I think that going back to what you originally asked, maybe there needs to be a coalition of parents outside of the PTA, outside of the school district, who get together and create something, and then we can get the buy-in from the school, from other parents, from the PTA, things like that, to try to build something to get more parents engaged and involved in their kids and maybe in the school system. But I think that having something on the outside and then bringing that inside will be beneficial.
There's a book by Malcolm Gladwell called The Outliers. I recommend this book to people all the time. But he talks about how, you know, we look at these kids who, you know, celebrities who've succeeded, these powerful people who've succeeded, and we say, you know, privilege got them there, or they just happen to be genius. Well, one of the examples he gives is Bill Gates. And he said, privilege allowed him to have his parents and other parents of friends who were interested in the same type of coding, computer science kind of thing, intervene and put a computer lab in their high school because they could afford it. And so he also goes on to say that it takes 10,000 hours devoted to any talent, skill to make you basically really good at it, where you can propel yourself into a career. So piano players, you know, athletes, it's all practice. Somebody's devoting tons of time to it. But a lot of that has to do with access. A lot of that has to do with resources. Yeah, and so, again, that's where, you know, I would hope to see a parent coalition saying, like you were mentioning, who can we get involved in this conversation? Can we pull on the U of I? Can we pull on a local studio? Can we pull on something to bring resources to these kids so that they can be successful in things they want to be successful in? Because isn't that, I mean, just completely blind, isn't that as a society what we want, is to have successful, you know, people in our society who are giving back to the economy, who are able to have lucrative positions? I mean, we hear that all the time. You know, our society suffered. We saw what happened in 2008. how do we, you know, pull away from this idea that there's just this one size fits all, that it's STEM or it's, you know, something related to STEM. That's the only route you can go to be successful. My daughter, I love her. She's a dreamer. She has this school in Michigan she wants to go to that's a high school. It's $50,000 a year. But it's performing arts, mm-hmm. all performing arts. Okay, that's wonderful, and I can understand why it might be expensive. But why is this not available to everybody?
Exactly.
Why is the education system become a business? If you're charging that much, I'm sorry, you're a business. That's all there is to it. But again, you know, I think that's where parents, you know, like you're saying, I want my child to be successful. I'm even willing to try to connect with them to find their way of what they want to, you know, see as being successful. But okay, so I figure it out. How do I do it? I can't get support from the teacher. I can't get support from the school administrator. There's nothing in the community that I can afford to get them where they need to go.
Yeah. So if the parents are not there to, you know, give their input, like you're saying, then I guess, you know, the system kind of developed their own for that child, and that, you know, not given the parent opportunity to say, hey, well, he likes video games at home. He reads certain books at home, and he does a really good job the way he does it here. But because we're, you know, if we're not engaged in, as parents in the schools, we're not, you know, we don't have the opportunity to say, hey, well, my vote count.
So we obviously know there's got to be ways to improve what needs to be done, because we need our parents. There's no question about that. We know the benefits of it. You can read it. You know, there's different research that says better grades, you know, likelihood of enrolling in college. There's been just the benefits to the teachers being able to share what their workload is. But we have to think of better ways to do this. So what ideas do you think should be considered when it comes to parent engagement? If, you know, is it tables at the open house the first week of school saying, here's different, you know, subgroups that may do this type of work? I mean, is it newsletters that are better, that are more parent driven and not school? I mean, what do we need to do?
I think we got to start where what's working now, and that's social media. I mean, everybody's on that. So however we can get them engaged in, you know, on the way that social media, you know, whether it's Facebook or whatever, you know, I think that could be a start. And you know, once we build that relationship, we got to meet them, kind of find a way to build a relationship with them somewhere. And once we do that, then I guess we can pull them on in for a meeting, actual face-to-face meeting.
I would say, for me, and what I recognize just this year is that, you know, reaching out to parents via email, my assumption is that many parents do have access to an email address, and so that therefore they can check. But also, a lot of the teachers, like this year, when we got the introductions from my kids' teachers, they talked about signing up to get notices via text message. And although I haven't signed up yet, but I remember getting some of them in the past, and that helped out quite a bit, just to know what was going on, what was happening. But the emails that I get, like, there is a morning, we get the morning announcement. So we get to see what the kids actually, you know, heard throughout the day. And it's like, oh, yeah, we're supposed to do X, Y, and Z. I think that that helps out a lot. And then we get our newsletter, the Jefferson Journal, that comes and it tells us about different things that are happening in the community or with different organizations or clubs within the school system. And that helps out quite a bit, because it lets me know where I can go maybe help or support my kid or support one of her friends. So
one of the things, and okay, so I'm a little biased because I do this with my radio show. You need to live stream stuff on Facebook. If a parent can't physically be there because of daycare, give them another way to engage. Come on, PTAs have Facebook. Schools have Facebook pages. Live stream a meeting. I mean, I know it's to some degree discourages an organic connection, but I would rather a parent know what I'm saying and be able to see what, you know, the discussion was. And then I'll work on getting face to face with them at another time, because at least you're informing them in the first place. When we have technology at our fingertips, like you said, use it.
And of course, the other thing is, you know, getting out to the communities.
Yes.
Getting out of the...
Sorry.
Going into the hood, you know what I'm saying? What's going on? Being afraid to go in and see what's going on, you know, some of the events that they may have in the, you know, some of the different, like, you know, you have CU days and things like that. Just kind of jump out there and just, you know, get some information out, meet some parents, you know. And,
well, churches have open events.
That's,
you know, yeah. Go where, like you said, go where they are. Because if you're going to try to make them come where you are, exactly. Roll of the dice. Yeah.
That's
true. And because for like Champaign-Urbana Day, the district does have a table and they pass out backpacks and things like that. So they are trying to be visible in that context. But that's one day.
Yeah.
In August. And one day in August, and it's kind of at the end, and it's like this, you know, jump start to back to school, but there should be some more initiatives that are taking place that really can, because you really can engage parents. Parents want to be involved, especially when you're looking at summer, things like that. I think that there could even be more camps and things that can be both parent and child, and it doesn't have to necessarily happen Monday through Friday.
Right.
If you can get them on the weekends, but then I understand that people say, well, gosh, then you have to pay for the teacher's salary or something like that. But we have to look at, we may have to pay in order to see that end result. I mean, mm-hmm. but if you come and you meet them and they see their principal or something like that coming into their community, it's like, wow, they're really invested.
That blows your mind when you see your teachers in the public anyway, let alone down the street from your house.
Yes, it's so true. I mean, that's something even with at the football games and things like that. When you see teachers, I mean, kids really enjoy seeing them in that social aspect and not necessarily like, oh, get to class or, you know, things like that. And they see them in a different vein. And you just, it really breaks those barriers down. And parents seeing them in the store. And how about speak to the parents when you're in the store? If you see them, it's okay mm-hmm. to talk to them, because there's also that can be a connection as well. But well, I certainly like social media.
Teachers are going to be either directly or indirectly somehow an influence on your kids.
Absolutely.
They're going to help them to form their opinion on school based on the teacher. Mm-hmm. Was the teacher horrible? Did they not respect me? So they're going to do it regardless. So you need to figure out a way to connect with your teacher. And really for me, I always felt like, and this was just the reason why I got involved, there's no way to determine that it's going to get the way that I want it done unless mm-hmm. I do it.
Absolutely.
So as a parent, you want them to do what they need to do for your kid. You have to be involved. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, if you're not involved, you're leaving it up to them to do Definitely. It how they see fit, to educate your child, advocate for your child, whatever it is. And it may not be done the way that you like it to be done. So, you know, hopefully we can, you know, can continue this conversation about parent engagement, because I think we need to, hopefully it's hint, hint, this is for any Unit 4 administrators listening, they need to be part of the next conversation.
Sure.
Because it has to be supported by everybody all the way up to the Mellon building. You know, we have to have social workers supported. Mm-hmm. We have to have programs like Operation completely supported.
Absolutely.
We have to have parents supported.
Yes.
Everybody has to have their own level support. It cannot just be, like you said, see you days. We were there. Mm-hmm. Right. Great. We're done. Yep. It has to be. And even though probably people are like, what did Sheldon say? You have to get in the hood. You have to get into the neighborhood.
Yeah.
You have to go where they are. Because, like you said, that shows effort.
Mm-hmm.
That's since some level of sincerity where they're going where they need to be. So, yeah. Well, thank you guys for being on the show.
Thank you.
Glad we had a chance to have this conversation. Like I said, this will be first of many. So
exciting.
I'll be inviting you guys back to share
great.
Some opinions. Hopefully we can see some parent mentor groups get off the ground this year.
That'd be great.
So we can really start testing parent leadership, mm-hmm. parent engagement. So like I said, thank you to my guests
thank
in the
you.
Studio for lending their voice to this important topic. And thank you to the listeners for tuning into In the Know on WEFT 90.1. Tonight's show will be archived on Radio Free America. I'll also upload the audio to my personal Facebook page, and you can also find it on Tumblr at In the Know 217. Next week, we are going to be having a topic that, again, another hard-hitting topic on child abuse. You know, why are we seeing it? How do we see it? You know, really the reality as a former child welfare worker, you know, I want to be able to show what child abuse means. It's not what you see in the movies. It's a whole lot more than that. And how as a community can we wrap around our families who are in need, our children who are in need, and be able to give them, you know, the resources, the tools, the support that we can to help them hopefully, you know, get trajectory in a different direction. But again, you know, thank you again for all of your help in talking about this discussion, and we will hear you guys next week.
you're going to make some mistakes. So to you other kids all across the land, there's no need to argue.
Hey folks, you're tuned to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. It'll be time shortly for Champaign-Urbana Radio Theater, but I have a couple of announcements before we get there. If you haven't checked out the WEFT events calendar yet, you may want to. It gives you all the information about meetings, fundraisers, and other activities. Members and the general public are always welcome at any WEFT events, so be sure to check us out. Go to weft.org, click on events on the right side of the page. Also, your next opportunity to become a trained air shifter at WEFT is coming up in September. Applications are being accepted for the next classroom training session on Sunday, September 9th at 3 p.m. Applications are available on the WEFT website or at the station. Applications can be